Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. We are in mid-May, a couple weeks past the 2020 NFL Draft. And I thought it'd be fun today to group some players into certain categories, like players with high variations in terms of their production, their production potential based on their landing spot this year. Players also that I think are very talented, but most likely to bounce around the league a little bit before sticking. Think of those as like kind of the Raheem Mosterts of the league. Players I want no part of based on their landing spot, not their talent. Guys that I think if they landed somewhere else, they might have had a better shot, at least early on, to contribute or to at least even make the active roster. Then we'll do a little deep sea fishing and talk about some players who I think have some talent and could stick to the league and stick with a team and maybe even produce in the league down the line. Some of them may even rise to the surface and become monsters in this league. So a little deep sea fishing later on. But first, listen, I don't do this enough when it comes to the podcast, so I'm going to make it a priority. If you haven't bought the Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication, I recommend you go to mattwaldman.com and get it now. Listen, you have the pre-draft and the post-draft. And then in addition to the post-draft, you get a monthly newsletter from June through December. And listen, if you haven't gotten the post-draft or you haven't seen the post-draft before, this is usually where the fantasy owners lose their minds and love it, because it gives you re-rankings of the players based on their landing spot. I do depth chart analysis for every player based on every rookie based on where they fit in the depth chart, who's ahead of them, and what how much time they have left on their contract, or if there's a potential out there who's aging and there may be some turnover due to their play. And you get an idea of who they're going to have to compete with and how these players who are on that depth chart, what their roles might be this year. You also get, you know, analysis on good fit and bad fit. The rankings that I do give you a kind of a sweet spot analysis based on average draft position data that I've monitored, you know, just after the draft with about 15 leagues, and you can click on those leagues and see those drafts. I give you links to them, and you can see how I've analyzed it to show you the sweet spot between where I may recommend a player be taken and where you can actually get him. And so that gives you a way to really formulate the best way to get value on the players that you like, or on players that you like, but maybe they're a little overvalued, and help you formulate a plan to say, you know what, maybe these aren't guys I want to take right now. So I give you all of that in the post-draft. And people usually are like, I would pay for that separately. I don't even want the pre-draft. And I've had people tell me that, and I explain to them that they're going to find out within about 3 years that they are very happy that they got the RSP pre-draft. And they used to not believe me on that. And then I'd get emails 3-4 years from that point, and they'd say, you were right, the pre-draft's even more valuable than the post-draft because you're getting an unvarnished look at the evaluation of the talent of these players outside of landing spot. And a lot of these guys get traded or they get cut and they end up acquired by another team and they end up fitting better with that particular organization. You know, the Raheem Mosterts of the world, you know, guys like that. Or a Boston Scott, you know, a guy that I've really liked who wound up in Philadelphia after year one, after, you know, almost making the Saints active roster, and then wound up in Philadelphia and actually played well down the stretch. So the pre-draft is actually, I think, the most valuable publication for dynasty players, but I give you the immediate dynasty outlook because the funny little secret, or not so dirty secret, of dynasty league play is that most dynasty players play dynasty like it's a redraft league. They're very short term about how they look and turn over teams. So 3 to 4 years from now, they actually come back and look at the pre-draft and they're like, wow, that actually gives me even better information. But you know, the post-draft is useful in the sense for rookie drafts and understanding the value of players in the current marketplace so that you can get the best value possible from them and give you that idea of what's going on with the depth charts. In addition to that, for the $21.95 you spend to get the massive pre-draft, the valuable post-draft, you also get a June through December newsletter. And in that newsletter, I update my rookie rankings from the past three classes. So from 2018, 2019, and 2020, I re-rank those players for you this year in June. And then if the season, depending on how the season unfolds this year because of our pandemic, usually I do it in August and then later in November. I'm definitely going to have it out in June, and I'm almost finished with it as it is. I just have to write up some commentary for each of the players, and I'm about a third of the way through the commentary right now. So you get all of that for $21.95. Great, you know, great deal, great bargain. Highly recommend you do it. When you do so, you support the podcast. You support the fact that the website that I have. You support the newsletter that I put out. You also support the writing that I do and Mark Schofield does and the podcast work that we do together. So really worthwhile to be able to, you know, if you like the content here, you like what I do, you like what Mark does, get the RSP. All right. So let's get started to the fun stuff here. Okay. High variation landing spots for rookies. Now, these are spots where I think that based on the talent of the player and where he got drafted or signed, he has a shot to be able to perform as a fantasy starter right now. But also, depending on how the situation plays out, he could be a guy end up buried on the depth chart and not used to his capability this year. Okay, the first guy that I think has a really high variation landing spot is Baltimore wide receiver Devin Duvernay. Now, as you know, I've liked Duvernay. This is a guy who really didn't drop a pass at Texas until midway through, I believe, either midway or early into his senior year. So incredible hands, high work ethic, former running back with outside wide receiver track star speed, okay? 4.3, you know, high 4.3 in the 40. Good acceleration, sturdy back, or sturdy player. And when I say back, the reason I say that is when I see him at Texas, there were some things on film where you could see they used him in the red zone in the backfield. And they actually had him run plays between the tackles successfully. And you could see that he had the vision to be a decent running back. And it's funny because you look at the past and you see, like, you know, little Jordan Humphrey, you know, he was a guy who was a running back who got converted to receiver. The same thing happened with Duvernay. They kind of have a habit of doing that at Texas. And some of these guys are pretty good running backs, you know. So Duvernay's that guy. And when I think of the Ravens, the one of the things that you think about their offense is really the work that they do in the middle of the field. And they already have Marquise Brown. You know, you look at their tight end, you know, Mark Andrews, and you think about, you know, the Chris Moore and some of the other receivers in there on their depth chart who already are established and work pretty well in the middle of the field. And Duvernay certainly has the talent to become a good starter who will work that area as well. But one thing that he has that he adds to the equation that could consolidate this roster a bit and give them more opportunities to use roster spots for different positions that they may need more is to be able to use Devin Duvernay as a hybrid receiver and scat back. When you think of Danny Woodhead, you know, you got to remember that not only was he a Jet and a Patriot and a Charger, but he was also a Raven. And the Ravens had use for him out of the backfield where they could use him in the slot, they could split him outside, but they could also use him as a receiver out of the backfield. And while Justice Hill is a talented player, if Devin Duvernay is placed as a part-time backfield player, a part-time scat back, who they can also split outside and run deeper routes with, but they could also run the ball with him a little bit, that gives them a player who can do two things for the cost of one player, and that could make Justice Hill expendable. And I know there are people who are real Justice Hill fans, and I'm not downgrading Justice Hill's talent. I'm just telling you that Duvernay may be able to give you what they want from a back like Justice Hill, you know, in terms of the scat back, quick hitting plays out of the backfield, because that's how they're using him more, and occasional runs, but then also have that expanded route running capacity that Duvernay holds. So if he ends up in that type of a role, then he has a possibility of becoming a really high impact PPR option early on in his career. Even if he's not, you know, used as extensively as a primary weapon at wide receiver, he could wind up being a primary receiving back out of the backfield. And enough of a split between the two, he could wind up being maybe a top 20 player, depending on how they label him at the position. And I think that most fantasy sites will probably label him a wide receiver, because that's already what he's, you know, how the Ravens have talked about him being. So Duvernay to me has a high possibility for, you know, being a fantasy starter this year. But at the same time, if they just decide we're not going to do that, or we're only going to use him in one of these roles, then it may not be enough for him to even acquire fantasy starter production at this point. The next player on this list is one that, you know, is another favorite of mine that I've talked about a good bit, but I haven't talked about his landing spot so much when it comes to, you know, post-draft, and that's Quintez Cephus. You know, it's funny to hear Gil Brandt compare Cephus to Michael Irvin post-draft, which was a pretty heady comparison. You know, the last player I heard, though, compared to that, and I certainly did that comparison, and so did Michael Irvin, for that matter, was Laquon Treadwell, who's now trying to start his career over in Atlanta, trying to maybe vie for a third or fourth receiver spot in Atlanta's offense. But Cephus, I think Cephus is the type of prospect, based on what I've learned since then, I think Cephus has, uses his hands better. I think he runs better routes. I think he's a little bit more, he's more versatile than a guy like Treadwell. He's as strong as Treadwell, but I think he's quicker, and I think that he tracks the ball extremely well. You know, unless there's some issue with him learning, I think that he's going to have an opportunity to compete with Geronimo Allison and Danny Woodhead for the third or fourth receiver role in that offense alongside Marvin Jones and Kenny Golladay. And it's a good pairing long-term, because long-term Marvin Jones is getting older. His career is probably winding down in Detroit in terms of his contract, because I believe it expires at the end of this year. And they're going to need another receiver. And Cephus is just quick enough to probably play the flanker role. And that's really what he is. That's where Marvin Jones is going to, you know, what he plays in Detroit's offense. And Cephus can probably handle that role. You know, he can get deep on play action. He can use his physicality to win on tight coverage plays. And Matt Stafford's no stranger to throwing into tight coverage. I mean, Marvin Jones was, a couple years ago, was rated one of the best receivers in the league, if not the best receiver in the league, in terms of production against tight coverage. You know, contested plays. Marvin Jones was one of the best at it. Cephus is in that kind of mold. And Matthew Stafford has no qualms about targeting guys in tight coverage, because he has that kind of arm and that kind of confidence in being able to make those plays if he's confident in the receiver. So long term, I think Cephus has nice upside, and he's a player worth drafting, you know, to hold on to for the next 2 to 3 years, especially when you can get him in the third or fourth or fifth round, depending on the format of your draft. Now, the upside for him this year is if he ends up playing in the slot. And, you know, there's some promise there for him to become a slot player. We just have to see how good he is at being able to read defenses and be on the same page with his quarterback, and how quick he is in and out of breaks. If he can show that ability to work that slot area, and the Lions give him a chance there, he could become a better producer than Danny Amendola, because of the fact that Amendola isn't very good after the catch. I mean, he's quick enough, but he's not a physical player. And I think Cephas can give you more after the catch than Amendola. So if he can get open like Amendola does, or anywhere remotely close, and he's consistent in catching the football, which he's always been, he could vie for a big slot role, even though he's, you know, 202 pounds. He plays bigger than that. He could vie for that. If he can't vie for that, then now we're looking at him vying for a backup role with Geronimo Allison, a savvy veteran who's played the big slot, who can play some flanker if you need him to, the former Packer, who's a reliable pass catcher. If he can't beat Allison this year, then he's going to be stuck probably as the fifth receiver and only used in empty sets on occasion. Because, again, when you empty the backfield and you use empty in Detroit, you're going to have a guy like TJ Hawkinson split out somewhere along the way. You're not going to put him on the bench in empty in most cases because he's one of your better receivers. So you can see the variation here. If Cephas plays the slot role and they use a lot of 11 personnel, maybe say half the time or maybe even a third of the time, Cephas could end up being productive because he's going to generate nice matchups. And he's a guy that could also be used to back up Jones, and he might end up getting an opportunity both at flanker and the slot. And especially, and the key for him will be beating out Allison. If he beats out Allison and he's the number four receiver, he might get a shot to play both slot and flanker. And if, you know, Jones gets hurt, then you could see them moving Cephas to Jones' spot. Now, say Kenny Golladay gets hurt, you could see them also then moving Jones to the split end area because they don't really have another receiver with that kind of speed to play split end. And Jones has just enough to suffice, I would say. It's not ideal, but he's good enough to be able to do it. So you put Jones at split end. You would then have either Allison or Cephas at flanker. And again, that's why it comes down to how he fares against Cephas fares against Allison. If he does well there, he has a chance to play. And if someone gets hurt, he has a chance to wind up being actually a routine contributor in that offense and has really real fantasy upside at that point. So the next player on the list is Laviska Shenault. When we look at Shenault, you know, my fear is actually what's kind of becoming a reality right now, but I'm starting to kind of come around to the idea that it may not be so bad. My fear was that Shenault was going to be made a gadget player and that they were going to use him just like they did at Colorado, you know, that whatever team that drafted him, in this case the Jaguars, were going to use him as an H-back, they were going to use him as a running back, they're going to line him up at a couple of different receiving spots, but it wasn't going to encourage his development as a route runner in a focused sub role. You know, put him at flanker. See, my thought was put him at flanker, let him develop as a flanker and get really good at that. And then sure, you can use him occasionally in the backfield or as an H-back, kind of the way Robert Woods has been used. But Robert Woods was kind of already well on his way to mastering at least one, if not two to three wide receiver positions as he was entering the league. Shenault is a little raw, you know, terrific hands, you know, great power, great quickness. First step quickness is fantastic for his size, terrific balance, you know, but he's gotten hurt. You know, he's had three surgeries in the past year with the abdomen and then the shoulder and the turf toe. And you just, you know, that's been the concern is can he stay healthy? And did Colorado really do him any favors to you, you know, by using him the way they did? You know, again, that's Colorado's prerogative. I mean, they want to get the most production out of him as possible. So they want to hand him the ball as much as possible. I get it. They're not there to serve the NFL, you know, but for Shenault, I, you know, my fear is he goes to Jacksonville. They make him a gadget player. And then as a gadget player, they don't use the gadget player well. Like the offense isn't imaginative enough to use him in a gadget role where it doesn't become predictable. And that's the biggest issue with gadget guys. You look at Tavon Austin and, you know, as a, you know, his role became predictable in the Rams offense back in the Jeff Fisher era. And then it's just like, since then, he hasn't really developed as a receiver to the degree that you could, that any team, you know, the Cowboys, you know, they couldn't really count on him and say that he was going to be, you know, a guy that they felt like could develop into a starter. He was he became a reasonable backup to his credit, but you can see they added CeeDee Lamb. You know, they got rid of Randall Cobb. You look at the situation, it's not like they're like, we're going to promote Tavon Austin, you know, to a starting role. They found somebody else. You know, they felt like that was still a weak spot for them. And I think with Chenault, my concern is he winds up in that scenario where, you know, Doug Marrone and his offensive staff, just maybe they don't do a good enough job of, you know, grooming Chenault in this level. So, you know, Chenault may have some early production and look very good as an all-purpose player, but to me, the big turning point will be what happens in week 6, week 7, week 8, as teams start to get a feel for how Chenault's being used. Can the Jaguars adjust again to what defenses are doing and stay one step ahead? Because a lot of teams don't wind up not being able to do that. And then that hurts the player who's in that role. And then they end up just not using that role as much. And then the player ends up, you know, in an even more limited scenario where they're just not producing. And that's the downside scenario for Chenault. The upside scenario is that they do stay ahead of the game. And Chenault ends up being a guy who can give you 400 to 500 yards rushing, who can give you another 400 to 500 yards receiving. And if that, and do it from a variety of scenarios and maybe get open and break open on, you know, high leverage plays in the red zone where they use him in the way that the Rams or the Chiefs use their players, who often they worked with jet sweeps and did different types of routes out of the backfield or off of from the H-back role, with guys like Robert Woods or Brandon Cooks or Tyreek Hill or Mecole Hardman. And if Chenault can get, you know, 800 to 1,000 combined yards with 6 to 7 touchdowns, he's starter material right away. So I think that that's a possibility with him. But based on how most teams have tried to use gadget players or make players gadget type of options, because it can get predictable so quickly, the downside is palpable. So to me, Chenault's worth picking this year, depending on how things unfold this summer. You know, if we have practices this summer and Chenault's being used a lot and he stays healthy, I think he could be a go for you to take a chance on in the late rounds of redraft leagues. He's certainly a dynasty selection. I mean, I think he's a second round pick, in value, you know. So you're just going to have to be patient with Chenault at this point and hope that maybe the team can figure things out and have a good plan for him this year. But long term, I just hope that he can master at least one or two of the wide receiver positions. I think he's fast enough, despite his time at the combine, because he was, again, running with a sports hernia. I think he can be a split end in the NFL. But I also know he can be a flanker. And if you can get him to learn two, if not all three, roles at the wide receiver spot, and then maybe use him as an H-back, and he becomes that adept, he could be a superstar in the league. So I love the upside, but worried about the fit, worried about the plan for him. The final guy who I think is a high variation player is Zach Moss. You know, the Buffalo Bills, I think, made a good decision to draft Moss at this point, and he's a nice complement to Devin Singletary, just if you look at it as a pairing for these two, where you've got, you know, Singletary being more of a scat back, and then you can use Moss as kind of the pounder, the grinder, the guy who can be your, who can work also on third down, you know, and that's the key. Is that, you know, when I look at Devin Singletary, certainly he can catch the ball. You can put him on screens. That's all good. But he's not, you know, really a big guy. So he's not a great blocker. He's probably not a candidate that you want to use as a pass protector on a regular basis. And then in short yardage, as good as he is at finding creases and he has nice footwork and he works hard and stays alive as an effort player, Zach Moss is just a bigger dude. He's bigger, stronger, better contact balance, better flexibility, terrific pass protector. I mean, Utah, I've talked about this, they'll leave him alone one-on-one against edge defenders, and he's handled them well. That's the kind of confidence they had in his techniques. And I think that Buffalo's going to find that he'll adapt to, you know, pass pro in the NFL fast enough that they may find that they have a compelling option to be the lead back, and that Devin Singletary winds up being the complement, being the scat back complement. And if that happens, I could see where Moss ends up being capable of an 1,100, 1,200, 1,300 yard season with double digit touchdowns. And if that happens, now you're talking about a pretty high-end fantasy starter, you know, maybe even a top 12 fantasy starter. So that's the high-end upside. The downside is that they want to use Moss more as a third down back and a short yardage back. And as a result of that, you get Singletary being the guy who gives you a good 800 to 900 yards, and then it's Moss giving you somewhere between 400, 500 yards, and then more of the receiving goes to Singletary. Moss is used more as a pass protector and a short yardage guy. And then you see this split where it's like Singletary doesn't get a lot of touchdowns. Moss gets a higher percentage of the touchdowns that are allotted to, you know, running back carries, but neither of them are really worthwhile as a lone fantasy guy. They both end up being guys you have on your team, but you're using as bye week options and you're trying to predict where the best matchup lies for each of these players. So those are my high variation landing spots. Devin Duvernay in Baltimore, Quintez Cephas in Detroit, Laviska Shenault in Jacksonville, and Zach Moss in Buffalo. How about the players with talent who are most likely to bounce around the league before they stick? Now, these are guys that, you know, I really liked something from their evaluation. I could see how they could develop, but they just didn't land in a place where you've got to hope for some things to happen that you may not want to hope for as just a, you know, being a good human being. You don't want to see people get hurt, you know, but you want to see opportunities for these guys. And maybe the only way that's going to happen is an injury or a player just misperforming, not performing well, and ended up getting cut. So they're going to have to benefit from a bad occurrence from somebody else. You know, heading that list to me is Rico Dowdle, the running back for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you've got Ezekiel Elliott. You've got, you know, you already have Tony Pollard, who's demonstrated that he can perform well at the very least a scat back role, and probably can handle three down work as well. So you've got two good backs already. You've got Chun, who is a, you know, out of Troy, who I think is an effort player, really smart effort player who does well on special teams. So you're going to need, you know, the third back in Dallas, anybody who's going to beat Chun is going to have to be a special teams option, or they're going to have to be so good as a runner and receiver and blocker in the offense that they actually displace Tony Pollard. And that's unlikely to happen. Okay, so the third guy is going to have to show you something special teams-wise, or be as good as Tony Pollard in the preseason, and the team just feels like they've got to carry four backs at that point. And I just don't think they're going to do that with Ezekiel Elliott as their star. But Rico Dowdle has that three-down ability. You know, terrific receiver. You don't see it a lot in terms of his stats, but he tracks the ball over his head well. He can make contested plays. I've seen him on back shoulder routes, on deep sideline routes, on seam routes, the screen games on lock. Good player. And at his best, again, I've seen him at his best early in his career, and he showed some of the movement skills you'd see from a guy like Joe Mixon and Le'Veon Bell. Flashes of that. You know, the jump cuts, ability to see, you know, one step ahead of the defense and really set defenders up with his footwork and quickness. And he's powerful enough to break tackles. I mean, this is not a scat back. This is a guy with a three down back build with the quickness and athletic ability of a scat back. Very good player, but I think he's going to have to go somewhere else. And part of that is that he's also, you're also on a roster with two other players who could flash enough with their talent that in limited reps, because we remember these are all UDFA late round guys, Rico Dowdle, Siwo Olanunua, and Darius Anderson. All three backs have talent. All three backs are going to be vying for a small number of reps in a shortened training camp scenario to where somebody's going to get cut. I don't think they're going to keep all these guys. Probably two out of the three get cut, if not all three of them get cut. And they're going to probably take away from one another. I mean, if, you know, when you look at Olanunua, he's maybe a guy that they might want to save as a fullback. And if they save him more, if they use him more as a fullback and decide that's what they're going to do, is that he can be our big, he can be our short yardage guy, and we can use him as a fullback, maybe on special teams, and then develop him more into a tailback. He has those skills. I mean, he's very quick. He's someone that has a skill to be able to bounce outside. He has good cutting ability. His issue is kind of more like the Brandon Jacobs of the world early on in Brandon Jacobs' career, which was he tried too hard to be a scat back when he had the power and size to be, you know, a downhill runner. This is kind of a Jeremy Hill style type of back in terms of what he can do athletically, but he just doesn't have the discipline yet and the maturity with his decision making to play at the level that Jeremy Hill played at least short term in his career. So Olanunua is a guy who's probably going to get in the way of Dowdle a little bit. Darius Anderson, same type of thing. This is more of a scat back guy who would have to like just be unbelievable on special teams in terms of, you know, coverage. But he's a good receiver out of the backfield, very quick. I mean, his nickname's Jet, and you can see that in terms of his short area quickness and acceleration. Not great long speed, but when he attacks downhill, makes that first cut, makes first man miss, he is a handful. And he's a guy, again, that could start off well and, you know, wind up limiting Dowdle and Olanunua's touches. And I think all three of these guys wind up canceling each other out and end up having to be on signed to futures contracts with other teams and work their way up onto a depth chart. It's possible. We've seen more than any other position, we see this with running back, that they bounce around the league, go to one, two, three, sometimes six teams, like Raheem Mostert was on six different teams over the span of the past several, you know, few years, until he found an opportunity to now the 49ers are pretty much leaning on him as either their lead back or their co-starter. Another guy who's kind of stuck in a spot that I think has talent, but and this will be the last running back on the list, and that's Xavier Jones with the Rams. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, quick, really nice change of direction skills. Someone I think can run a zone scheme pretty well if he doesn't bounce things outside a little too much. But I think he's got the discipline to become a good contributor in the league, and certainly the burst and the size, and he's a very good receiver. And he's kind of the guy that I think teams that the Rams maybe the hope they would have gotten from John Kelly, but Kelly never really played quick enough, and it just seemed like that he didn't distinguish himself enough in practices to get those opportunities. So Jones might be able to displace that, but then you're still looking at him as the third back on the list, maybe the fourth, if you still count, you know, Malcolm Brown, who's hanging around, and they're not getting rid of Malcolm Brown. I mean, they know what they've gotten him and what he can deliver when called upon. So Brown's going to be in there. You know that Akers and Daryl Henderson are going to be competing for work. So from that standpoint, you know, your best bet, you know, for Xavier Jones is, again, going to have to be injuries to two or more players on the Rams depth chart for him to get an opportunity. He's going to be somewhere else. And then, you know, you're going to hope that he can maintain his confidence level, keep working, and get to a point where he finds a good fit. And then he might be able to distinguish himself as a contributor. Three wide receivers who fit this mold, because receivers can also bounce around and wind up pretty good, you know, down the line. And one of those guys is Austin Mack. And Russ Landy talked about him in our Scout Talk podcast, you know, earlier in the year. And, you know, Mack was a guy where injuries derailed his opportunity for growth at Ohio State. And then when you look at Ohio State's offense, we've seen receivers who've kind of surprised over the years with them, or who were talented but kind of limited, and they've made NFL teams and stuck with teams, like, you know, but they haven't really become top performers. Well, Mac has the potential to become a very strong route runner in terms of diversity of routes. He catches the ball well. He has some decent skill after the catch that he can get better at. You know, I think he has the NFL size you're looking for, and I think he can play special teams. So he's on the Giants right now. Giants are pretty stacked in terms of what it looks like at the front of their depth chart. You know, Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, Darius Slayton, those three are going to play. But then you've got guys like Corey Coleman, who are very talented, who can do some work on special teams, but really hasn't put his game together. You know, a guy like even, you know, White, you know, what's his name? Reggie White Jr. Reggie White Jr., who was a guy who I really liked last year, almost made the team, ended up being on the practice squad. He might get another shot here, and he has the goods to actually be a you know, a nice flanker in this league, maybe even a split end if he shows a little bit more speed. But he's a good aerial player who I think getting acclimated to the team year one and what's expected from him, I think he'll be able to do the work and be able to compete in a, you know, at a higher level this year to make the team. And, you know, there's going to be a couple other guys on that roster where Mac would have to compete with to earn a roster spot here as maybe the fifth receiver. If he can be the fourth or fifth guy, you know, he might be able to stick, but I don't know if that's going to be the case. And, you know, as a UDFA, he's more likely to be on the chopping block. So I can see him maybe bouncing around one or two teams before he finds an opportunity. But he has skills that I think could develop into starter quality production down the line, you know, if he works at it, if he stays healthy, finds the right fit. Colin Johnson in Jacksonville. I mean, you look at this depth chart, and it's interesting because we already know DJ Chark has fulfilled, you know, a lot of what the expectations were with him ahead of schedule, if you ask me. Chris Conley is probably going to be leaving within the next year, but he's a solid reserve. Dede Westbrook's intriguing at times in terms of what he can do maybe as a flanker or a guy who can win above the rim, but also what he does in the slot. I think he's an underrated player, but he's kind of in that mold of players who wind up bouncing around the league, get contributor opportunities, start when someone gets hurt, but don't get valued, or don't that teams don't value them enough to look at them as a weekend, weekend out starter. But I think the potential's still there for Westbrook, but the fact that he hasn't really done it by now and really emerged at a high level, some of that may have to do with the quarterback carousel they've had in Jacksonville. I think a lot of it has had to do with that, but some of it may also be that what he was able to do with Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma in terms of winning the ball in the air and being physical for his size just may not translate well enough to the NFL, that it's just not working against the more physical NFL corners. But when you look at Colin Johnson, he has that size. He can replace Chris Conley, you know, and then you have LaVisca Chenault, obviously, who we talked about. So can he be the number three receiver? Could he be a big slot receiver in the league? Can they put him at split end and then at slot as a big slot in terms of alternating? Is he more of an Auden Tate type of player who's just not quite fast enough? Or is he fast enough where you can use him in a position like the big slot, or occasionally at split end, and be kind of more of a Kareem Osgood or a Kasim Osgood type of player, the former Charger, who can give you an 800 to 900 yard season and give you some red zone opportunities as well and produce at that rate. So, you know, Colin Johnson to me has that upside that he could probably be used in a couple of different ways with the Jaguars and maybe thrive, but this may not be the team for him either. It may be a numbers game where he winds up elsewhere and he's going to have to compete, you know, for a spot where ideally I think the big slot is the best thing for him. I think that would probably be where I'd want him to work, and I just don't know many teams that are going to go that route with him. So he may have to bounce around a bit. Another one who's kind of more of a big slot candidate is Tyler Johnson. I know a lot of people like him, but if O.J. Howard stays, if Rob Gronkowski plays to the level that he's capable of after a year off, and Chris Godwin and Mike Evans stay healthy, there's really no room for Johnson in this offense. Cam Brate still on the team. I mean, I look at this and I think, you know, Tyler Johnson at best makes the bottom end of the roster at best. At, you know, to me, more likely he's a practice squad guy or he's signed to a futures contract elsewhere. You know, good player, good hands, you know, physical, just not very fast, and someone who I think has to play in, really has one position on the offensive side of the ball, and that's the big slot role. I don't think he's going to be, unless he just becomes fantastic at being physical off the line, and, you know, he's shown promise with that. If he might have a shot to become a flanker, but I think that, you know, again, the likelihood of that isn't as high. He's probably going to bounce around the league a bit. So let's end this up with two more categories here. Players I want no part of based on their landing spot, and this has nothing to do with their talent, okay? Well, it does, but it's talent is secondary to the landing spot because I think each of these guys have varying degrees of opportunities to be contributors in the league, but they just didn't land in a great place. And heading this list may surprise you, but it's Lynn Bowden Jr. Man, listen, when I watched him run as a quarterback, I loved his contact balance, really promising. But you have Jalen Richard. You have Josh Jacobs. Lynn Bowden Jr., you're training him to basically be your third back, maybe to replace Jalen Richard in the next couple of years, but I don't think it's going to happen right away. And I think it's going to take a couple of years for that to happen at the very least. And you just never know if these guys have the vision to be between the tackles runners because they played a little quarterback and they ran out of the quarterback spot. You know, it's hit or miss. Jerick McKinnon, he's been hit or miss in this area. You know, other guys, you take a look at, they've tried to make that conversion over the years and it just doesn't happen. So Bowden, to me, I thought was more of a wide receiver. The Raiders think he's more of a running back. Or they decided we just drafted the best athlete we could find and we'll figure out where we're going to use him later. And I know that sounds kind of like a shot at Gruden and Mike Mayock, you know, but again, there is a philosophy. It's like get the best player, figure out how to use him later. But I think in this case, they already have enough talent at the receiver spots that when you look at Bowden, if you're putting him at running back, you're kind of... It's a bigger risk for the player. And I think that this is a guy who has the contact balance and the speed and the open field vision to do it. I just don't know if there's really a role for him in this offense. And if there is, are you taking away from Josh Jacobs? Are you taking away from Darren Waller? Are you taking away from Hunter Renfrow? Are you taking away from Jason Witten? You know, there are a number of guys who are that fourth or fifth option when you spread the field, who you might want to prefer having on the field to Lynn Bowden Jr. So I'm not really in love with the landing spot and the decision to make him a running back. Cole Kmet, Chicago Bears. I mean, one of the Bears just haven't really had a strong tight end since Martellus Bennett. Now they have, you know, Jimmy Graham at the end of his career. And Graham is the type of guy that, you know, I think, you know, in this offense, he can perform well enough that he's going to remain the starter. Kmet could probably come in there and give you some, you know, some opportunities there. But it's up to whether Adam Shaheen is healthy or Broniker is healthy enough. And if those guys perform to what they're capable of, even if it's not like, so they're how about if they perform the way they've performed in the past, I think Komet's going to be sitting on the bench. And if you try and force Komet into the game, I think you're going to see mistakes out of this kid in terms of, you know, some issues with blocking. And as a receiver, maybe he'll have a really tightly focused role as a pass catcher in certain situations where he can thrive. But I don't think he's a primary threat. And I also think that the Bears are, you know, a year away from a changeover with their GM and possibly with their coaching staff. And then that means that the investment in some of these players that they have right now, they'll have new coaches and new general managers who aren't invested in these guys. And then that means, you know, a guy like Kmet gets kind of caught in the wash there. And I think he's most likely to get caught in the wash in Chicago. Josiah DeGuara, they're going to use him as a fullback or an H-back. And if they use him more as a fullback, I think in the way that this offense has been run, you see, I could see maybe him used as a second tight end, but you already have guys who can block pretty well. And I wonder how, you know, it's going to depend on how fast DeGuara can develop. I like his upside as a receiver, his ability to stretch the field, his skill after the catch. But I'm just a little skeptical about how he's going to get used in Green Bay. There's a possibility that maybe he becomes a bigger threat in this offense, you know, if they run a lot more two tight end sets and then they split the guy out and move him around to find matchups. And if they do that with DeGuara, he could have high upside. He might be that high variation guy that maybe should have moved him to the high variation tier of this discussion. But I'm a little bit further down on him just because you look at a guy like Robert Tonyan who can catch well. You already have Jay Sternberger who's developing. You know, Mercedes Lewis is still on the roster. He's a good blocker, good short yardage option. He won't be around long. You know, he's getting up there in years. So DeGuara might have an opportunity there. But I just also think that this offense is kind of this Green Bay team seems to be, you know, having some. There's change on the horizon here. I don't know whether it's going to be with the coaching staff or the front office or with the offensive team. I mean, there's all three possibilities. And it seems like that's there, that the change is going to arrive fairly quick. When you draft Jordan Love in the first round and you already have Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers is getting up there in years, but he could probably play another 3 or 4 years, you know, based on what we see with Drew Brees and Tom Brady. I think that's very likely that he could do that. And the idea that, you know, they have A.J. Dillon who might end up replacing Aaron Jones, you know, within a year or two. That's an interesting scenario, the changeover in the offense and how it's going to look. You know, is there going to still be a battle between Rodgers and the coaching staff a little bit in terms of how things are done? And so there's a potential for a lot of chaos beneath the surface here. And I'm just not sure I love DeGuara's fantasy potential because he's getting started as a fullback. And Juwan Jennings, you know, 49ers. Like what he could maybe be as a big slot option, maybe even a flanker, kind of in the way that Austin Mack, you can possibly see that option for him, but those options for him. But, you know, Jennings is slower. Jennings is very physical. But there are so many receivers on this team, so many young receivers. Jalen Hurd, Dante Pettis, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, you know, Trent Taylor. As I mentioned last night on the Audible with Sigmund Bloom, football guys, can you name a veteran receiver, a guy who's been in the league at least 4 or 5 years, who knows how to run every route, who's played in different systems, who understands what it means to work and develop at an NFL level and see the end of come out the other side of the tunnel with all of that? And the answer is they don't have one. You know, they had Pierre Garçon a few years ago. He's gone. Emmanuel Sanders, they traded midseason to get him, and that made a huge difference in that offense. But if you think that Emmanuel Sanders' impact for, you know, 3 months was enough. It may have been helpful. It's probably extremely helpful, but was it enough? I don't think so. So you have a bunch of young guys and Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan's hard on his players. You know, he expects a lot from them, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't have kind of a peer mentor, peer coach, peer developer who's a veteran on your team with them, who's done it, who's been able to, who can show you things, who can help you get there. You know, this could be a recipe for disaster if you ask me with this wide receiving core. And so I'm not too confident in Juwan Jennings, not only being able to make this roster, even if he does, the development opportunities here, I'm skeptical, that's my fear, is that, Shanahan's going to collect all this nice talent, but is he going to develop them? Because most coaches don't develop. You know, the NFL is about, scheme, game plan. The development in terms of getting better, that's up to you. And a lot of those young guys rely on the older guys to help them get pointed in the right direction about who to work with, what to work on, what to prioritize. And they don't have any of that. You know, it's just, and this happens in a lot of workplaces. So we got a lot of young talent, nobody with a compass, at least not yet from what I can see. Darrington Evans, I watched Darrington Evans, speedy back, good return specialist. And I think he's wound up on a team where I would call the Tennessee Titans the land where scat backs die. Because you look at Deion Lewis, really didn't do too much, maybe at the end of his career, but we'll see, with his next landing spot. But, I think that, Darrington Evans with, Derrick Henry kind of being the guy there, I don't think Evans is going to get a lot of high leverage opportunities. His best, and if he ends up getting thrust into a role early, I have concerns about him as a finisher, in terms of how he uses his pads, how he extends his frame. He can get better in that area. He's not a complete runner in terms of all the different schemes that are out there. The different blocking schemes, he's going to have to become more patient, use better footwork in the zone game. And I just think that, at this stage, he's on a team that at best he's going to be a good kick returner. And I have concerns about him developing as a scat back, especially on this particular team. And there's really no veteran scat back either that's going to help him out. So, a lot of boom. I think at best it's boom bust potential for him. Our final look, our final category that we're going to look at for this hour is the little deep sea fishing. And these are guys that something about their game has intrigued me over the years. And it's more of a gut feeling thing. In addition to, some of these guys, it's skills. There's a lot of different skills that I like about them. But overall, there's kind of a gut feeling that these are guys that might be able to stick to a roster down the line and emerge as a contributor. Doesn't mean they're going to be fantasy guys. Some of them might. And I'll mention to you who I think might have a shot at being a relevant fantasy player. But most of them are guys that wind up on your team, perform well enough that you're glad that they can be reserves, but you're not drafting them in fantasy leagues. Okay. First one is Brian Herrien, the Georgia running back, who's basically been at Georgia forever, behind a lot of really good starters. And I think he has special teams potential. I think he's a smart runner. He's a high effort guy. He can catch the ball. He can block. He does everything well. He wasn't great at one particular thing. And I think he would have wound up being a starter somewhere else, but wound up being kind of a medium-sized fish in a big ocean at Georgia. And so he's in Cleveland. I wouldn't be surprised if he challenges guys like D'Ernest Johnson or Dillard, for that third role, third or fourth role on the depth chart, and he grows from there. This is a guy that I think he could wind up being a productive reserve in the NFL and having a nice career. Kind of like Sean Drawn years ago. Maybe, at worst, I think he's a Sean Drawn type of player who, you can put in a lineup and he might be able to give you some yards and surprise fantasy players every once in a while, but you're not drafting him. At best, maybe he's a little bit more than that. Maybe he's more of a Justin Forsett, Chester Taylor type who might be able to work a season for you and behind a good line can give you starter production. Steven Sullivan, this is a guy that I would keep an eye on as a potential starter down the line. LSU wide receiver just really didn't understand why LSU wanted to make him a tight end until he went to the Senior Bowl. The light didn't come on until then. He came back from the Senior Bowl and told the LSU staff, I finally get why you were trying to make me a tight end. Yeah, dude, you're slow for a wide receiver, but you have decent hands. You have the body type to grow into that role. You have the quickness to grow into that role. And you have some route skills that could really translate as a tight end. And it showed up in practice. So now here he is in Seattle. Seattle is a team that definitely loves competition. And when you look at their tight end, they've got Greg Olsen, who's going to be a great guy to learn from in that room. You've got Jacob Hollister, who's a scrappy, highly competitive guy, who's a bit of an overachiever, who's going to work hard. So if you're Steven Sullivan, you're going to have a guy that you can consult as a resource. You're going to have a teammate who you're going to have to try and keep up with to work with. And if you're focused on trying to become, you know, an NFL starter, this is a really good room to do that in, especially with Russell Wilson being, you know, your quarterback and this open competition that Pete Carroll likes and the fact that they're open to undrafted players developing. You know, guys like Doug Baldwin, later round guys like Richard Sherman. You know, the way Russell Wilson got in there. Chris Carson, you know, another example. Thomas Rawls in the past. You know, Hollister getting the chance that he did. So, you know, Sullivan's a good one to look at. Scotty Phillips was a longtime favorite of mine. Didn't perform very well in his workouts, but this is a guy that I wouldn't be surprised if he finds his way onto a team and not necessarily becomes a starter, but becomes a kind of a special teams third down back who, you know, for weeks at a time, if he's used on a roster, he could perform. You know, maybe at best he gives you a little C.J. Anderson type of, you know, play in terms of because he has a low center of gravity. He's someone that is smart in terms of his running style. He can be physical. There's some quickness and speed there that may not have matched up as well with the workouts as maybe it does on the field. Good pass protector. You know, so I think he's going to stick to a team. I'm not sure about his fantasy value, but he's a guy I would just keep an eye on. Jawan Johnson. His quickness was really kind of impressive. And, you know, he has that nice long reach. If he can fix his hands a little bit, he has some issues with how he uses his hands at the catch point. But when he's got a great reach, he's got the physicality. If he can fix his hands a little bit on some of these contested plays so that they're in the position they need to when the ball arrives, I think he might have a shot to play that big, you know, that big outside receiver or big slot role. Kind of a guy that I could see working with someone like Philip Rivers and end up being good or a very, you know, kind of a lower middle class version of what Larry Fitzgerald brings to the table as a kind of a big slot or flanker option. Jawan Johnson's one to keep an eye on. And then a guy who just looked like, you know, he looks like a guy when I watch him play, I think this is a guy who could easily be a pro, but looks like he's just, you know, this is a fun hobby for him. And that's Scotty Washington out of Wake Forest. You know, when you watch him, he is, you know, he's a big guy, 6'4", 6'5", in that 220, 230 range. Someone who can go up and win the ball easily, you know, seems to have enough speed. He's in Cincinnati right now. He could give Auden Tate a run for his money. He's a guy that I look at and I think, wow, you know, this is someone who, if he applies himself, I think he could make a roster and maybe even develop into a starter down the line. Long shot, but interesting to look at. So those are my deep sea diving. Brian Herrien of the Browns, Steven Sullivan of the Seahawks, Scotty Phillips of the Houston Texans, Jawan Johnson, trying to remember where he's with. He might be in New Orleans right now, Scotty Washington, the Bengals. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoy this show, you know, please rate and review on iTunes or at any other outlet that you find Matt Waldman's RSP Cast. pick up the Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication. Remember, you get the pre-draft, post-draft, and the newsletter all for $21.95. Thanks for listening, for the great content that, you know, for the great feedback that you've given about the content, and hopefully we'll continue to deliver great content to you. You guys have a good week.